Okay, so we're about a week, a little better after a week after the winter retreat, and there's been change has happened. It's one of the great things of winter retreat, to sort of everything's about as stable as you get in a monastery or in the world. People are not traveling, or there's the actual community is quite stable, and then of course since the ending of the retreat, then the what is it, April 8th today 9th?
Yes, the 8th.
Yeah, so it's just a little over a week. Of course, various people who are on the retreat crew have gone. Some are coming back, and then beginning to have guests coming to practice with us again. Of course, also Venerable Tejasaro. What the heck's your late name?
Nick,
that's right. So, Venerable Tejasaro is again Nick. So change happens. And then changing from the winter routine of, you know, which is fairly contained and focused on the formal side of practice, and changing to a more picking up chores and duties again. So this, how do we do that? What can we be paying attention to so that change and transition is not too overwhelming, too stressful, too weird? I think one of of course, there's many, many perspectives and aspects of Dhamma that are useful to reflect on, but what comes to mind is right effort, and that sense of how do we apply right effort? How do we live with right effort? Of course, when we in the way that the Buddha defined right effort is the whatever effort is for the preventing of unwholesome mental states that have yet to arise is right effort, or whatever effort is for the relinquishing, letting go of unwholesome mental states that have arisen is right effort. Whatever effort that is for the bringing into being, developing, cultivating of wholesome mental states that have yet to arise is right effort. And whatever effort is for the maintaining of wholesome states that have arisen is right effort. So that the sense of effort is not about unnecessary, about keeping busy or throwing yourself into some activity or task, which can be useful sometimes, but you have to be paying attention to the mental states. What's the quality of the heart? And effort is important. Effort, energy, wirya. The Buddha is quite explicit in that he calls his teaching a viryavada. This is a teaching of effort. Because there were teachings in the time of the Buddha, and there's teachings around these days where you shouldn't be making any effort. Everything is perfect as it is. And the Buddha, so I think it was Suzuki Roshi, and he said, yeah, everything is perfect, just needs a little improvement. But their sense of everything was divinely ordained. We don't have any agency, or we do have, the results of actions, but those actions are going to play themselves out according to fate. These are teachings from the time of the Buddha. So the Buddha is saying, no, there is effort to be made. There is the appropriate effort to be made. There is, and you have to pay attention to the results of that effort. Because you can make, in the Eightfold Path, there is right effort and there's wrong effort. And you need to be making the right effort. Also that whatever effort that one is making is also in the context of the Eightfold Path. So grounded in right view, right thought, grounded in right speech, right action, right livelihood, and leading to and being supportive of right mindfulness and right concentration, right meditation, so that there is appropriate effort to be made, and learning how to attend to it, because even just the concept of mindfulness, mindfulness isn't just a passive observation of things around one. There is a mindfulness, and when the Buddha defines mindfulness, part of the cultivation of mindfulness is also around effort, in the sense, because the Buddha, in the Pali, when he describes right mindfulness, it's anatapi sampajanos satima vinaya loke abhijato manasa. So it's atapi is the quality, is referring to effort, is the effort for the burning up of defilements, this ardency. There is an ardency. It's not passive or lackadaisical in any way, shape, or form. There is an ardency. And tapas, atapi, that sense of tapas is like a spiritual fire. There's some spiritual fire there. There's some passion. It's not sort of toned down to a dull noting. You have to be involved in the process of mindfulness with the right and appropriate kind of effort. That sense of the clear comprehension is That's an extensive reflection on the results of what is our mindfulness? How is it playing out? So we're clearly comprehending how that mindfulness is affecting us. How is it affecting us? How is it affecting others? And being possessed of mindfulness or awareness, turning away from the covetousness and grief that we have toward the world. I mean, we have our preferences, we have our likes, we have our dislikes, we have our desires and our aversions. We have our wants and our not wanting. How do we turn away from that? And that takes effort, really. You have to be willing to bring into being, willing to let go, willing to restrain, willing to nurture the skillful. So of course, one of the problems with defining it specifically as a mental state, and sometimes it's it's hard for us to see clearly. I mean, that's the whole function of delusion, is to delude us, and the whole narrative of delusion is I'm right, everybody else is wrong, this is reasonable. This is a reasonable desire. This is a reasonable mood. This is a reasonable opinion. And everybody else is just around you, sort of shaking their heads, saying, "Good grief, what's he up to?" But that's the function of delusion. That's the function of ignorance. And that's, of course, right effort has to be in the employ of diminishing ignorance, avijja, a lack of true knowledge. So that sense of recognizing what are we putting effort toward. And I think that sense, that diminishing, because the Buddha puts avijja. I mean, there's avijja and tanha are roots of suffering, roots of complication, roots of difficulty. It's like Lumpa Samedo's years ago, his definition. He did a whole winter retreat on talking about dependent origination and of course the whole dependent origination paticchasamuppada sequence begins with avijja paccaya sankhara. Ignorance is the condition for mental formations. But Lopa Samhita sort of, and of course it goes on to the whole cycle of the 12 links of dependent origination. Lopa Samhita sort of distilled it down into ignorance complicates everything. And I think that's a really helpful. As long as there's going to be some ignorance, avijja functioning, things are going to get complicated and difficult, and it's going to get messy. Is that what I really want? And from the Buddha's perspective, and in the in that dependent origination cycle, avijja is given kind of like a primary place of the origins of suffering. Of course, in the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha points to tanha, and misguided desire, And of course, they're both true. But in a sense, how do we tell? How do we recognize when ignorance is functioning, when avijja is functioning? And you know, that takes effort. I think one of the skillful, of course, there's always multiple angles and perspectives that the Buddha has given, but one of the extremely helpful tools or toolkits that the Buddha gives as a basis for reflection is the five hindrances. Just being able to pay attention to, because we can't really see our delusions and our ignorance clearly, and unless there is some manifestation, and there's something that reflects it back. It's just the nature of the mind. And again, our biases within the mind, and that we misperceive, we misread things and misconstrue truth and reality. It's just that's why we're stuck in suffering and samsara. Using those five hindrances as a tool to can act as the mirror to shine a light on if any of the five hindrances are there, then that is the manifestation of ignorance. That is the manifestation of delusion. We don't get swept up in sensual desire without delusion as a basis. We don't get swept up in anger. The whole idea of righteous anger is not something the Buddha subscribes to. There is the anger, ill will, aversion, irritation are all stains of the mind, of the heart, and they conduce to suffering. Sloth and torpor, kind of lassitude of mind, dullness. Its basic root is ignorance. And that's actually, there is a sutta that the Buddha, Anguttara Nikaya, Anguttara 10, I think 61. And it's on the manifestation of ignorance and its causal roots, in the sense of, because oftentimes with that dependent origination, then one, it all comes back to all of those different, starting from old age sickness, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair, sort of all tracks its way back to avijja, to ignorance. But then in this sutta, the Buddha points to avijja having a cause and condition as well, having the food, being nurtured by. And he says, what is the cause and condition for avijja? And it's the five hindrances. So that we can use those five hindrances as a mirror or a lens to be able to recognize, there's ignorance functioning in the mind. And of course, this, because it's in the connected discourses on the tens, and there's 10 links that the Buddha goes through in terms that are supporting what supports the five hindrances. I think it's the three kinds of misconduct, misconduct by body, speech, and mind. I can't remember all the rest of them. It goes back to, I think it tracks back to unwise attention. So that sense of mindfulness, being a place of wise attention, mindfulness, awareness, skillful application of the mind is going to be a wholesome resolution, and that sense of you know, their mindfulness being the key. But of course, mindfulness needs to be nurtured and supported and informed by right effort. There's a quote of Ajahn Chah's where he says, "Mindfulness is the graveyard of all things," and that's on a certain level. It's like, oh, good grief! What does he mean by that? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's the kind of language you don't really hear or use, but it's the resolution or the ending, when the sense of a place to completely relinquish and give up come to a true cessation, nirodha. It's in mindfulness, in right mindfulness. Of course, right mindfulness has to be informed by all the rest of the path. But it's not, an annihilation or a pushing away or a non-becoming, a sort of a vipava tanha, I'll just push everything into that thing and it'll be gone. But it's that things truly come to their end when cease to haunt us, cease to complicate our hearts and our lives with real mindfulness, with real clarity, with real full awareness. So this right effort is such an important thing. And then, those five hindrances, to use them as a mirror, the restlessness and worry, just recognizing when the mind is worried, it's obsessing, it's fearful, or it's kind of agitated. But it's not a positive, wholesome mental state. It's not informed by wisdom and clear seeing. That is a manifestation of avijja. It could be strong, it could be weak, but it's just that it's playing itself out. And we need to be willing to look at it carefully. And again, rather than the justifications that we assume or the biases that we lean towards, we have to be willing to seek a full resolution of avijja and a full freedom from dukkha. And the skeptical doubt, vichikicca, sort of wavering, the mind that is doubting, it's skeptical, it doesn't want to accept anything, but it doesn't want to commit to anything either. So it's you know, we undermine ourselves, and it, you know, that is avijja functioning, and to be able to have this sense of you know, how do we recognize when avijja is there, and that's a you know, just having something that helps us to see more clearly and get a balanced perspective, and to be able to come into balance, and you know, and in order to put forth skillful effort you know, rather than say tangled effort or say unbalanced effort. So the there's a case that Oliver Sacks, he's a neurologist and author, writer, very skillful, very interesting. He had a patient who, and as a neurologist, he came across all sorts of very different situations that people were experiencing because of their and just the neurology of the system being a bit off. So anyway, this person couldn't stand up straight. His perception was that he was standing up straight, but he was leaning way off, and they couldn't really. And I don't think Oliver Sacks ever figured out what was going on neurologically, other than the signals he was receiving was that I'm standing straight, here I am, upright, and he's leaning over, and what they ended up doing, the patient was a carpenter, so he's a very practical person. So what he did was worked on his glasses so that there was a little level on his glasses, so he could sort of see, get a visual on, am I actually level or not, and am I standing upright? And so he had an external, external sort of take, external read on that, and so he was able to train himself to stand upright, stand straight, and so five hindrances. These are our kind of external level of for the mind to be able to sort of see, am I, where am I, which way am I leaning towards? What am I getting caught up in without my even knowing? So it's a it's an aspect of right effort to be applying one's attention and endeavors toward, you know, how can I, you know, how is avijja manifesting? Because again, it's, you know, the whole purpose and function of avijja, of ignorance, is to be a kind of a force of delusion and lack of clarity, lack of clear resolution. So that, and of course, the opposite is true in terms of using. For the in that sequence of the right effort, you know, what it, they say with the the unwholesome, it's for whatever we do for the preventing of the unwholesome, for the relinquishing or the letting go of the unwholesome. But then with the wholesome, how do we bring into being, how do we maintain the wholesome, the skillful? So they, in the Buddha's toolbox, the main is the seven factors of awakening, and these are in the Satipatthana Sutta, the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Mindfulness of the hindrances, mindfulness of the seven factors of awakening. They are there. So using that, mindfulness, that sati, as the very first foundation for the seven factors of awakening. Dhamma vichaya, the investigation of dhammas. This is positive, wholesome, skillful mental states to be bringing into being and maintaining, and weary effort, energy. So are we putting in our effort, or are we drifting? Are we putting off to tomorrow what we should be doing today? It'll all work out. It'll be fine. No, it requires effort. This path is not a path of waiting for things to happen. Joy, and that's a really important quality is the practice bringing us a sense of joy, of kind of an exhilaration, of piti, pasati, tranquility. Sometimes you're putting forth effort, even with joy, it can be too much. It can overload the system. It can be agitating. So there's a tranquility, a settling, a stabilizing, a serenity, and a stillness of samadhi, and equanimity is the last. Upeka, equanimity, the sense of even, steady, clear. The last factor of awakening is of these seven factors of awakening. So those are positive, wholesome, skillful qualities that one can be using as a mirror to see if am I putting forth effort in the right direction? Is that effort fulfilling the path? Is it providing the basis for growth in the Dhamma and the resolution of dukkha? So the Buddha was so skillful in the tools that he gave us, but we do need to be willing to use the tools, put the tools into practice, develop skill in the application of those tools, and of course that itself is kind of a part of right effort. So so as we transition out of kind of winter retreat mode and into kind of more regular period of the year. Be willing to keep a clear, it's just like keep yourself accountable. make sure you know, give yourself the encouragement to keep this, keep the Dhamma front and center in the heart. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.